And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Anzalone Show. And I am very excited today to be welcoming Dave DeCamp back to the show. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Kyle. Thanks for having me. This is my Thursday is my Friday, which is when I usually come on your show. So I'm always in an extra good mood when I see you.
Thursdays are typically like kind of the end of the busy part of my week as well. So although now we are doing a Friday episode of the show, so everybody be sure you are subscribed to the show. We have Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski returning to the show tomorrow, so some of our, you know, fairly regulars, Dave and Karen, coming on the show to end this week. Dave, a ton going on today. Trump is posting on Truth Social, so we'll be breaking some of that down. The U.S. is seizing Iranian tankers. Israel is waiting for Trump's green light to go back to war. And I want to talk about Israel's war crimes in Lebanon. So I want to go to this post from Donald Trump first at Truth Social. He writes, "I have ordered the U.S. United States Navy to shoot and kill any boat, small boats, though they may be. Their Navy ships are all of them 159 at the bottom of the sea. This is putting mines in the waters of the Strait of Hormuz. There is to be no hesitation. Additionally, our minesweepers are clearing the strait right now. I am hereby ordering that activity to continue, but at tripled up the level. Thank you for your attention to this matter." So, Dave, what do you think so far? How is Trump's attempted blockade and control of the Strait of Hormuz going?
Yeah, well, apparently, I mean, as you've covered, according to the ship tracking data, Iranian ships have been going in and out. A few dozen have made it in and out of Iranian ports since the blockade started. We've seen a few ships get seized now by the U.S., but only one, you know, near Iran. The other two have been in the Indian Ocean. I don't know exactly how much control he really has over the strait. And he keeps talking about Iran mining the strait. And as I understand, some mines have been laid, but the way that Iran is controlling the strait is really through the threat of drone attacks. You know, during the war, we saw a lot of drones hit tankers and ships that tried to go through. I don't think they really need to lay, you know, mine the whole strait to keep it closed. And are there, I mean, maybe you know better than me, but are there actually U.S. minesweepers in the strait? Because as far as I understand it, the U.S. is not enforcing this blockade in the strait. They're back where the Gulf of Oman meets the Arabian Sea. So I just don't know if anything he's saying is credible at all. And I think that could go for a lot of, you know, most of the stuff he's been saying lately and putting out on Truth Social.
Yeah, I do believe that CENTCOM's minesweepers that were at the Fifth Fleet were moved out of the Middle East, I think, to be retired sometime between the 12-day war in June and the start of this current conflict. So they had previously said they were doing a mine clearing operation and I think sent two guided missile destroyers near the Strait of Hormuz. I'm not sure if maybe they think they have some ability to do scans with whatever sonar systems they have on those ships, and they're using some other type of vessel or maybe aircraft to try to detect the mines. I don't know. But it doesn't seem like, you know, what we think of with mine clearing, you know, just basically sending ships through to make sure that there are no mines for the commercial vessels to pass after. Now, in a second Truth Social post, Trump claimed two things that seem untrue to me, but I'm wondering your thoughts. One is that the Iranian government is so fragmented that basically the U.S. is in a position where we can't negotiate with Tehran because they can't present a consistent proposal. And number two, the Strait of Hormuz is under total U.S. control, or sealed up tight, as he says. Dave, what do you make of that first claim that Iran's government is in disarray?
Well, that's the narrative that they're putting out there, and they're laundering it through Barak Ravid over at Axios. I mean, he had this whole report yesterday trying to push this idea that Iran's leadership is so divided. And one of the claims that he made in there was that the IRGC, you know, went against Araghchi, the Iranian foreign minister, by attacking ships in the Strait of Hormuz. And this is kind of the what I've seen other U.S. officials point to. But if you look at the timeline, I mean, the whole narrative just doesn't make sense, because it was last Friday, as I think you covered for AntiWar.com, that Araghchi and Iran declared that the Strait of Hormuz would be open to commercial traffic, you know, to ships that do cooperate with Iran. But and that was in response to the ceasefire in Lebanon, because that was a key Iranian condition for the ceasefire and for opening the strait. Well, after Iran said that it was opening the strait, Trump said they were going to keep the blockade on Iran. So then the next day, Iran said in a statement from the National Security Council, the Supreme National Security Council, that as long as the U.S. maintains this blockade, then the strait will not be open to all commercial traffic. And then the IRGC attacked those ships. So they've tried to kind of create this false narrative based on just a false timeline. And I just don't see any evidence of that. I mean, everything we've seen from Iranian officials, they've been maintaining their positions. And this was something, you know, the other day when Trump declared he was extending the ceasefire, in the couple days leading up to that, it was really uncertain if there would be talks between the U.S. and Iran and Pakistan. And basically what I got from that was what Pakistan was telling the U.S. and what Iranian officials were saying was no talks unless the U.S. lifts the blockade. And then we saw another kind of information op from the administration putting out leaks that said, oh, Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff and J.D. Vance, they halted their flight to Pakistan because Iran hasn't responded to the U.S. proposal. But that's not what happened. What happened was the Iranian leadership said, no talks unless you lift the blockade. They didn't lift the blockade, so there weren't talks. And Trump has to throw out all this BS to make it seem like he wasn't the one who blinked there by extending the ceasefire when he clearly was. So this is just, to me, part of a fiction that the Trump administration is pushing to try to, you know, save face. But when it's clear that Iran is not, you know, in any hurry here to placate the U.S.
Well, and Donald Trump is saying that we're not in a hurry either. And today, over the past few days, Dave, oil prices, I think it was up like 3 to 4% for Brent crude yesterday, another 4% today. I know, you know, that's translating to real cost for Americans. The cost for me to fill up the vehicle is up about $15 since this war started. A fairly big gas tank, but still, that is a good sum of money going from $60 to fill up the tank to $75, and certainly going to keep going in that direction. Now, Dave, you know, one thing I want to mention is the chat really lied to you. We got a couple people saying that they're really excited that you're on the show today. So if you are in the chat, make sure you've given the show a thumbs up, that you subscribe to it so you catch future episodes. And of course, share out this current episode so more people get in here and are watching and what Dave has to say. Now, Dave, I think you might have an interesting perspective on this. Like me, you've kind of been following and covering news, foreign policy. I think, you know, tail end of the first Trump administration, throughout the Biden administration, and now we got Trump here, where, you know, I'm going to Truth Social, you know, a dozen or so times a day, and I'm basically looking to see if we're going to nuke Iran, if we have a deal with Iran, if the Strait of Hormuz is open or closed, what the hell is going, ceasefire on or off, extended, you know, kind of what do you make of this, and what do you think the geopolitical implications are of having a president that is just so reckless in his rhetoric and his actions as well, following through with them at times when other times completely folding and reversing almost inexplicably?
Yeah, I mean, Trump has always had this kind of erratic behavior, but it's been much more erratic lately. And I do think, to some extent, not so much what we've seen lately, but it is a strategy of his to keep people off guard, to make it very difficult to follow exactly what he's doing. And I remember, you know, really noticing the shift from the Biden administration into Trump, just how much the news cycle like changed every day. And, you know, we would have our page ready to go, and then Trump would say something at 11 at night. He has reporters in the Oval Office, and he'd say something that completely changes a story, and it's frustrating. And again, I think that is intentional. He wants to keep the press on their toes, and he wants to kind of throw a bunch of stuff out there to confuse people. But what we've seen lately, I think, is the him just showing that he is not in control. It reeks of desperation, you know, all the stuff that he's been saying about the Strait of Hormuz. He was demanding that Iran open it, open the effing strait, he said on Easter Sunday morning. And now he's saying, oh, Iran wants the strait closed, you know, if you won't open it, well, I'm going to be the one closing it now. I mean, it really doesn't make sense. And you do see, you know, there is still a contingent of people who just go along with everything he says, but I think it's becoming more and more difficult for them. I mean, you look at the threats to wipe out an entire civilization, like on its face, that is immoral. That is a horrific thing to threaten. Whether or not you plan on following through with it, you should not be going around threatening that. But then also, you know, you have people downplaying it, say, oh, he's not going to do anything. Well, doesn't that also, you know, isn't that also bad that you have the president of the United States constantly saying he's going to do something and then not following through? Like, and I mean, kind of from their perspective, from the hawk's perspective, is that something that you want? So it's just, yeah, I mean, he's just all over the place. And a lot of times I just ignore what he says now. You know, a lot of this stuff in recent days where he says, oh, we're going to have a deal with Iran, they're going to give up the enrichment. I mean, I basically knew that he was just completely full of it, just lying, and that turned out to be true. So sometimes I think we're better off just ignoring him and just watching what he does. And right now we're seeing the continued buildup in the region of aircraft carriers and things.
Yeah, Professor Mohamed Mirandi, a former guest on this show, but he's recently been saying on other programs that he doesn't even look at what Donald Trump posts, and his analysis is often, you know, very astute. So I do wonder if there's maybe a trick to that. Just pay as little attention to Trump as possible and, you know, look at things actually happening in the world, like the third U.S. aircraft carrier strike group, the USS George H.W. Bush, apparently arrived in CENTCOM's area of responsibility today, which means it's somewhere in the Indian Ocean. And we also have the U.S. seizing Iranian tankers. This is, I guess, three Iranian vessels. One was a cargo ship and two were tankers, have been detained by the U.S. Navy. We've also had the Iranian Navy stop two, I believe, European owned ships in the Strait of Hormuz. They attacked three, they seized two. And I'm just wondering, you know, what you think about it. This war seems to be evolving a little bit during the ceasefire period, where before the intensity was on missile strikes and missile defense and hitting U.S. bases in Israel and striking Iran, where now it seems to be a shipping war where the U.S. is going to start targeting Iranian ships and Iran is going to respond by hitting either ships that are in the Strait of Hormuz or seizing any ships that try to cross it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that seems to be what it's turned into at the moment. I mean, it's not really a ceasefire because the blockade is an act of war, and the U.S. did actually fire on that cargo ship. So, you know, it's this goes to show. I mean, I've been expecting kind of the ceasefire to unravel, and the signs that I've been looking for are the U.S., the continued U.S. enforcement of this blockade, because Iranian officials are still saying no talks until you lift the blockade. And then we see the continued enforcement of the blockade, and then Iran showing that it's not just going to sit back and kind of take it. They're also going to do their own thing in the Strait, in the Persian Gulf. And how long can this go on? Can the U.S. and Iran just go back and forth attacking and seizing ships before some incident, you know, escalates everything? And now, I mean, I think this is a topic we're going to talk about today. Like, we see the rhetoric from Israel and just everything. And Trump. So another thing, today, Trump shared this, article from, what's his name? Mark, Thiessen. Who's a former speechwriter for George W. Bush, who's going around saying that we got to kill the Iranian leadership that doesn't want a deal. And Trump is amplifying this and sharing it on Truth Social. So all these threats trying to humiliate Iran is just telling me that Trump is not serious about peace. He's not willing to do what it's going to take for peace. So you have that with kind of the ship seizures and everything. I just don't see how long this goes on before it devolves into full-blown war again.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real, tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Right. I mean, the White House has to be receiving tremendous pressure from its allies, right, to find some solution to this. And of course, if Donald Trump is who I think me and you both think he is, as far as his, you know, kind of narcissism and his inability to actually negotiate a good agreement that could end this conflict, I think he's going to feel pressure to go back to war. Now, particularly by one ally, and that is Israel. This is what the Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz had to say today.
Israel is prepared for the renewal of war against Iran. The IDF is ready both defensively and offensively, and the targets have been marked. They are waiting for a green light from the United States first and foremost in order to complete the elimination of the Khamenei dynasty, the initiator of the annihilation plan against Israel, and the successors of the successors of the Iranian terror regime's leadership. In addition, the goal is to return Iran to the age of darkness and stone by blowing up the main energy and electricity facilities and crushing the national economic infrastructure. The terror regime in Iran specializes mainly in the internal suppression of the population through the Revolutionary Guards and the Basij, as well as in energy blackmail by threatening to inflame global oil prices. It is down for the count. Its leaders are hiding in tunnels and are struggling to communicate and make decisions. Its skies are wide open, and all its national infrastructure and strategic facilities are exposed to attacks. Yet it declares that it is winning, because just like Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in Gaza, it does not care about the heavy price paid by the population. The main thing is personal survival, which is not guaranteed either. When the attack resumes this time, it will be different and deadly and will deliver devastating blows to the most sensitive places. This will be in addition to the massive blows that the Iranian terror regime has already suffered so far, which will shake and collapse its very foundations.
So, Dave, I mean, here we have the Israeli defense minister saying that Israel is just waiting on the green light from Trump to destroy the Iranian civilization. I mean, he says the goal is to bring them back to the Stone Age. You know, I guess the big question is, do you think Donald Trump gives the green light?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Israel Katz is just a monster. I mean, those are just monstrous things that he says there. Plunge them into the age of darkness and stone. And of course, this is echoing President Trump. You know, he has made similar threats. So the question is, will they get the green light from the U.S.? You know, it is kind of odd for him to say that publicly, you know, put out as a statement that they're just waiting for the U.S. to give them the green light. Does that mean that the U.S. hasn't given them the green light, you know, that they're asking for it, but they haven't got it yet? I'm not sure, but unfortunately, everything is pointing in the direction toward Israel getting what it wants. We have seen the so-called ceasefire in Lebanon basically immediately devolve. And you know, if they want the war with Iran to restart, they're probably going to get it. Trump's going to make maybe, you know, I think we're seeing it, some weak attempt, some half-assed attempt to end it and bring peace, which we've seen him make in other places in the region, like Gaza, where Palestinians are getting slaughtered every day under his so-called Board of Peace. Because the way that he tries to do these deals is he embraces Israel and Netanyahu and tries to give them what they want. Well, what they want is war and death and expansion. And then, so then they help design these situations where that's what they're going to get, where they're not real ceasefires and they're not real peace deals. Sometimes they're just a chance for Israel to kind of, you know, recover its military and take a little break, but also continuing the airstrikes and keeping these places under siege, like in Gaza and southern Lebanon. Obviously, Iran is a different animal and can do some serious damage, but it looks like despite that damage that's been done to Israel, they want this to restart. And I think a lot of this has to do with the political situation in the U.S., where Netanyahu knows this is his last shot. So they want it to restart.
Hey, talk a little bit more about that, Dave, because I think it's a really important point to make. By the way, we're throwing up the chat today, so if you are listening live, you could leave us a comment. A lot of positivity, even producer Chris getting a shout out in the chat, so I'd love to see it. But, you know, the demographic trends that Israel sees, that Donald Trump may truly be the last pro-Israel American president, at least one that like wears their Zionism on their sleeve in the way that both Trump and Joe Biden did. You know, what kind of polling are you looking at? What are you seeing there?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the same trend that we've been seeing over the past few years, because, you know, I mean, the chances are, unless something dramatically changes, that a Democrat is going to win in 2028. And I mean, you know, because we always talk about, oh, how the majority of Americans are against aid to Israel or the genocide in Gaza or whatever it is. But when you look at the breakdown, the Democrats, you know, Democratic voters, it's like 90% who don't want anything, who don't want to keep giving military aid to Israel. So the Democrats are going to have to reckon with that. They tried to avoid it when Harris ran, and it was one of the reasons why she did so poorly. But they're going to really have to reckon with this. And even the Republicans, I mean, who knows who they're going to try to put up for 2028, if it's going to be Vance or Rubio. But we just saw Vance at a Turning Point USA event where he was heckled about, you know, helping kill children in Gaza. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, you look at Congress, this stuff is not translating. It's going to take a long time till it translates at the federal level. And the reality is, you know, whoever gets put up for 2028 is going to be pro-Israel, but they might try to, you know, placate the base and the voters who are against this stuff. But they certainly won't be anything like President Trump is now, and just openly and unabashedly in support of whatever Bibi Netanyahu does, and calling him a great wartime leader and all this stuff. You know, and Netanyahu knows that he's very in tune with American politics. So between now and, I mean, they still have a long time to go here to get what he wants out of Trump. But that's definitely part of the calculation here.
So, Dave, today we got some updated statistics from the Pentagon on the number of American service members injured in the war against Iran. That number has climbed to 400 injured. That's the even total. It's, I think, about 250 from the Army and then smaller numbers from the other branches. And, of course, we had 13 of our service members killed, actually, in that conflict. There's been a lot of speculation around that these numbers are actually far higher, particularly the number of, you know, people actually killed in this conflict. I've been somewhat skeptical of it just because, you know, the ceasefire has been in place for a few weeks, which means, you know, we wouldn't have seen any American deaths over a few weeks. I'm not sure how long the Pentagon could cover up the death of a service member in today's, you know, world where so many people are able to talk to other people in cell phone and internet communication and things like that. So what do you make of these numbers? And of course, they're appalling and too high, and this war should have never happened.
Yeah, I mean, I've been of the opinion that they were covering up casualties, and I think we saw that with the injuries. You know, they weren't putting anything out about it, and then it wasn't until the media started getting sources and stuff that they had to admit that there have been hundreds of injuries. And when it comes to the deaths, I agree that I think it is difficult, especially as this time has gone by, for them to cover up the deaths of kind of regular military service members, unless it's, you know, like Delta special operators. Like if people were killed in Iran, you know, when all those aircraft were destroyed and everything, if they were, you know, Delta guys, then they could cover that stuff up. But I feel like we also would have seen some evidence from Iran if there were dead U.S. troops among the wreckage there. So I think, you know, it's hard for them, you know, 13 dead, is the confirmed number.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess that, you know, it could be a little higher. I don't think there's like a mass cover up of deaths. But we've seen this pattern when it comes to the injuries, you know, they don't want to, disclose them. We saw it in 2020 when Trump killed Soleimani, and then Iran hit back at a U.S. base, and they initially claimed there was no injuries at all, and it turned out there were quite a few. So it's kind of the pattern. And I know Nick Turse has been reporting on this at The Intercept, and he said he had a report about how the numbers have been shifting. They subtracted some names, not names, but they subtracted some injuries from the total list. He was saying they're engaging in a cover-up in that way.
It certainly seems, at least on the injuries, that is probably the case. Dave, I want to go over to Lebanon now, where Israel is maybe going to face one of its biggest PR crises in American history after an Israeli soldier filmed, one of his comrades smashing the head of Jesus Christ with a sledgehammer in southern Lebanon. And then the IDF says, oh, we threw him in jail for 30 days, so we're punishing them, and we put the statue back up. Well, it turns out that there's a community note that Israel did not actually put that statue back up, or the you know, Jesus on the cross there. It was actually the Italian members of the UNIFIL peacekeepers, the UN peacekeepers that are in southern Lebanon. So, you know, what do you make of this whole story?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a PR nightmare for the Israeli government, which is the only reason why they decided to take action, or they say that they took action against the soldier who did it. And you saw that statement there from the IDF. They said, oh, in full coordination with the local community, we replaced the statue, the crucifix. But it's just a lie. I mean, so as I understand it from looking at local media from that town in southern Lebanon, there was a crucifix that looked like the one in that picture that was much smaller, that was donated by Israel or came through Israel somehow. But the actual crucifix that was destroyed was replaced by Italian UNIFIL peacekeepers. So, you know, they tried to, you know, put this out, to just put out the PR fire. And then in doing so, you know, there was just another lie in there, which is really not surprising from the IDF. But you know, we've seen this pattern. I remember from Lebanon, from 2024, there was a video of Israeli soldiers doing like a mock wedding inside an Orthodox church and desecrating statues and things. So this is a pattern of their behavior. And the only difference here is that, you know, it was pretty brazen, because some of the worst indictments of the IDF's behavior come from what they post on their own social media. And this was, you know, a soldier thought it was a good idea to post a picture of himself smashing the head of a statue of Jesus Christ and putting it on social media. And someone thought it was a good idea to take a picture and everything. So it goes to show kind of the impunity that they believe that they have. And, you know, another thing, just speaking of this, a story I wrote up yesterday, there's an Israeli rabbi. His last name is Yarbiv. I forget his first name, but he's a rabbi who was in the IDF and drove a bulldozer in Gaza for hundreds of days and destroyed many civilian homes. And he would take videos of himself destroying the homes and post all these pictures saying that they're erasing Gaza. He went on Israeli media bragging about how the Palestinians whose homes he destroyed had nowhere to return to. And he was just honored by the Israeli government in an Independence Day ceremony. He got to light a torch. So there's a reason why, again, these IDF soldiers thought that they could just do that and not suffer any consequences.
Dave, and before I let you go, I do want to ask just generally about Israel's treatment of Christians in the territory they occupy, whether that is destroying churches or smashing crucifixes in southern Lebanon, it's bombing churches in Gaza, it's, you know, snipers shooting people in the courtyards of churches in Gaza. I mean, you know, these are real horrors, but yet we're told that, you know, Israel and the U.S. make up this great Judeo-Christian alliance, and that's why we support them over the Muslim savages of the Middle East. I mean, you know, this is really the line of Laura Loomer, who is one of the more influential people people over President Donald Trump today. So, you know, what do you say about people who say this is, you know, this alliance is about the Judeo-Christian culture and ties that we have to uphold?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a fake narrative that's been used. And you know, a lot of the Christian evangelicals, not all evangelicals, but the Christian Zionists who have this kind of end times theology that want to support the state of Israel, they don't care about the Christians in the Middle East, the apostolic, Catholic, and Orthodox Christians who are suffering at the hands of the IDF, who are treated just as badly as the Palestinian Muslims. As we've seen, you know, the both churches, the Greek Orthodox and Catholic Church in Gaza, were attacked multiple times by the Israeli military. We've seen there's one village left in the West Bank that's all Christian, Taibe, and they're constantly being attacked and harassed by settlers. And not just what Israel itself does, but also what a lot of the regimes in the region that the U.S. and Israel support. Of course, you have Syria, where they help put al-Qaeda in charge, but also in Azerbaijan, you know, Israel armed them and helped them with the ethnic cleansing of Nagorno-Karabakh, or Artsakh, which was an ancient Christian community going back to, I think, like the 4th century. That's just gone now. And Israel helped Azerbaijan do that. So it's also, we just see lies. I mean, you know, you see Mike Huckabee, he posted this thing I remember about an Israeli ambassador to Azerbaijan who was Christian, a guy named George Deke. And he happened to be the ambassador to Azerbaijan while they were doing the ethnic cleansing in Nagorno-Karabakh of Christians. But Huckabee said something like, could you imagine, you know, if any one of Israel's neighbors appointed a Christian as an ambassador? And I just looked it up, and it's like the Jordanian ambassador to the U.S. is Christian, the Egyptian ambassador to the U.S. is Christian, Lebanon's full of Christians. It's just like, a lot of this is just reliant on people being ignorant, and that's really changing. And I think a big turning point was when Tucker Carlson started speaking mm-hmm. with Christians from the Middle East. I mean, it completely kind of pulls the veil off this stuff and really opens people's eyes.
Absolutely. So many of these narratives are coming through. Also, like the truth about that Iran not only wasn't building a nuclear weapon, but Israel has an undeclared and illegal nuclear weapons program. So that more of this truth comes out, the less and less Israel will have a hold on the United States of America. And hopefully, Dave, one day before we're dead, we will have a more reasonable foreign policy when it comes to the Middle East. Thank you so much for your time on the show today, Dave. Everybody, be sure to check out Dave's show, Anti-War News with Dave DeCamp. He has a new episode out every day during the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. It's up on his channel. And then, of course, like this video, be sure to share out this episode and subscribe to the channel. Really appreciate everybody's support.